Doing some fiber art or share your latest projects, all are welcome. And this Friday, Northern Lights Opera Company has auditions for their summer musical, Once Upon a Mattress. It's at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Park Rapids Armory Arts and Events Center. Find more information at northernlightsopera.org. Weather around our region looks like it's going to be a nice day today. Could see some rain mixed with snow, just a slight chance for that. But we're seeing temperatures near 40 and overnight lows in the mid-20s. That is sounding like sap season is going. Have you tapped your trees? Keep us updated. Text us at 218-326-1234. Hey, our question of the week this week. Tell us about a time luck was on your side. Text us at 218-326-1234. Tune in tomorrow on the Wednesday morning show with Andrew DeZingle and Jen Kellen. They'll be bringing you Twist and Sprout. It's a conversation with the Beltrami County Master Gardeners. It's 6:01.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel launched surprise attacks overnight in Gaza to pressure Hamas to release Israeli hostages. Gaza health officials say more than 400 Palestinians have now been killed, including young children. Another 400 Palestinians are wounded. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv. Senior Hamas officials have also been killed.
Israel is accusing Hamas of rejecting proposals by U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff for more hostage releases. Hamas offered a counterproposal, which the U.S. and Israel rejected. Israel says its military leaders secretly presented its assault plans over the weekend. Hamas said four of its officials in the Hamas-run government in Gaza were killed in the strikes, along with their families. An Israeli official said the military is focusing its strikes on mid-ranking Hamas militant commanders and leadership officials. Hamas says Israel's move exposes hostages in Gaza, quote, to an unknown fate. Hostage families and their supporters are organizing street protests, accusing Israel of endangering the hostages' lives. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
President Trump is expected to hold a call with Russian leader Vladimir Putin this morning. This comes as Trump has tried to play an active role in ending the war with Ukraine. NPR's Deepa Shivaram has more.
Trump told reporters Monday that conversations to get to a ceasefire and peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine are ongoing.
But it's a bad situation in Russia, and it's a bad situation in Ukraine. What's happening in Ukraine is not good, but we're going to see if we can work a peace agreement, a ceasefire and peace.
The president later posted on his platform Truth Social that, quote, many elements of a final agreement have been agreed to. But he did not specify what those agreements entail. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
A federal judge has upbraided the Justice Department. That's for defying multiple court rulings ordering that U.S. deportation flights be turned around on Saturday. The flights were carrying hundreds of migrants whom the Trump administration claims are Venezuelan criminals. NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran has more.
The Trump administration has until midday Tuesday to explain why it did not comply with the judge's oral and written orders to stop using the Alien Enemies Act to remove migrants to El Salvador. The White House says they include suspected members of Tren de Aragua, which the U.S. recently designated a foreign terror group. The Justice Department argued that an oral ruling was not enough to stop them, but that they did not fly any more migrants once the written order was released. Judge James Boasberg called that, quote, a heck of a stretch. The hearing raised multiple questions, including about the weight of an oral order compared to a written one. According to the White House, 261 people were removed to El Salvador, but only 137 of them were expelled under Trump's wartime power at the core of the case. Sergio Martinez Beltran, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR. The office of the U.S. Surgeon General appears to have taken down the webpage that included an advisory on gun violence. That advisory was issued last June by then-Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. He declared gun violence a public health crisis that leads to loss of life, unimaginable pain, and profound grief. But the federal government webpage for this advisory is no longer available. The Texas Attorney General says authorities have arrested two people and accused them of illegally providing abortions. One of the people arrested is a midwife in the Houston area. The other is her employee. The two people are charged with violating Texas's near-total ban on abortions. This is the first time the state statute has been used to charge people. New research shows that iguanas on the island of Fiji likely floated there on a raft from North America. As NPR's Jonathan Lambert reports, it is likely the longest such voyage by any land vertebrate.
How iguanas got to Fiji from the Americas has long been a mystery. The lizards could have walked, over many generations, across ancient land bridges, or they could have floated there on a raft of tangled vegetation. New genetic analyses published in the journal PNAS point to the raft idea. The study says Fijian iguanas are likely too young, evolutionarily speaking, to have crossed the ancient land bridges. And that suggests that these lizards floated around 5,000 miles to reach the island. Jonathan Lambert, NPR News.
And I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, an independent, nonpartisan research foundation collaborating with grantees and partners in the arts, school leadership, and youth development. More at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
Hey there, it's Megan Boffington from the KAXE News Desk, where I cover northeastern Minnesota from my home base in Grand Rapids. As a lifelong northern Minnesotan, this job isn't just reporting for me, it's personal. I'm committed to bringing you the full picture, whether it's shining a spotlight on community members like Babbitt teacher Amos Kaloji, who used creative commutes to teach his students about outdoor recreation, or keeping you updated on local government happenings, like Itasca County's appointment of a new attorney. So, if you're craving local news with a personal touch, join me, Chelsea Perkins, and Larissa Donovan on the Up North Report for in-depth coverage of life in our neck of the woods. You can help us by sharing our work on social media or with friends and family. And if you've got a story you think deserves attention, don't hesitate to reach out to us at news@kaxe.org. After all, these aren't just our communities. They're yours, too.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. Coming up, a midwife in Texas has been accused of providing abortions despite that state's near total ban on the procedure.
But first, in Gaza overnight, a series of punishing and deadly Israeli airstrikes took Palestinians by surprise.
A Palestinian woman in Gaza City, they're screaming for her children. That was a scene in a hospital in the north. More than 400 Palestinians have been killed and hundreds more injured, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. And Hamas says the airstrikes killed four of its senior leaders. Now, the strikes are the most intensive violence since a tenuous ceasefire began in January between Israel and Hamas as they negotiated an end to the war.
NPR's Hadil El-Shaad, she joins us now from Tel Aviv with the latest. Good morning, Hadil.
Good morning.
So why is Israel launching this attack now?
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been threatening this whole time to go back to war if Hamas did not release more hostages. This time, Israel says it is targeting Hamas militant commanders, wants to degrade Hamas's ability to rearm. That's according to an Israeli official who wasn't authorized to speak publicly. Just a reminder, the first phase of the ceasefire ended on March 1st. Over 6 weeks, Hamas released 33 hostages. Israel freed almost 2,000 Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails. The second phase was supposed to see a total withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza and a permanent end to the war. But instead of starting those second phase talks, Israel came back and said it wanted an extension of the first phase, where Hamas would return half the living hostages still held in Gaza.
So what did Hamas say?
Well, Hamas said that it had held up its end of the first phase of the deal and wanted to start second phase deal talks, refused the extension, which has led to these attacks. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said that, quote, the gates of hell will open in Gaza if all the hostages are not returned. And then we also know that the White House spokesperson Caroline Levitt confirmed that Israel consulted the Trump administration before the strikes.
And what are we hearing from inside Gaza?
I mean, explosions could be heard across the strip. The Gaza Health Ministry says hundreds of Palestinians have been killed, including children. NPR's Gaza producer Enes Baba was at Al Ahli Hospital this morning.
Dozens of bodies lay in every corner here in front of me, wrapped in winter blankets brought by relatives or maybe some ambulances. Women and children, entire families lay dead in front of me here. The relatives are wailing. The smell of blood mixed with gunpowder and burning flesh is returned once more in Gaza.
Also, an Israeli military spokesman warned residents in several Gaza neighborhoods to start evacuating immediately.
So we heard there Enes describe really what sounds like war again. Do these strikes mean the ceasefire is done and the war is back on?
So it might be a little too early to tell if the war is fully back on or what these strikes mean exactly for the ceasefire. You know, in recent weeks, Israel has been steadily increasing strikes in Gaza. Hamas hasn't yet responded with its own strikes. But today's assault is, of course, a pressure tactic by Israel to get Hamas to accept that extension. And they're a huge step back. Israel has blocked all aid, including food and medical supplies, 3 weeks ago. So aid groups are rationing quickly, dwindling supplies. And of course, you know, what does this mean for the fate of the hostages still inside Gaza? Israel says 59 remain held by Hamas, 24 of whom are still believed to be alive.
NPR's Hadil El-Shalchi in Tel Aviv. Thank you for your reporting, Hadil.
You're welcome.
A federal judge wants the Justice Department to explain its actions in deportations that took place over the weekend. The judge asked for a sworn declaration from the DOJ by noon today, detailing how planes carrying alleged Venezuelan gang members were flown from the U.S. to El Salvador, despite a judge's orders to turn the planes around. A hearing yesterday saw a debate unfold about when exactly the orders were issued and whether they had to be in writing to restrain government action. So what else can the judicial branch do if a judge believes the executive branch is ignoring an order? Let's ask Michael Waldman. He's a constitutional lawyer and the president of the Brennan Center for Justice. So, Michael, what evidence would demonstrate to a judge that the Trump administration ignored the court's order in this case?
Well, for starters, when did the airplanes take off? It seems that they took off at the very least in the middle of the hearing. Did the administration choose to violate what was a very clear demand by the judge that the planes turn around? This is a major constitutional case. This involves a law that's only been used 3 times in the country's history. And this judge wants to make sure that it's the courts and not just people in the administration who decide what the law says.
Yeah, so we need to figure that out, right, to be able to kind of pin it down. I mean, it seems like that would be a little difficult.
Well, yesterday in the hearing, the lawyer from the Justice Department basically stonewalled the judge. The president of El Salvador, which is the country where the people were deported to, issued a tweet, I believe, saying, oopsie, too late. So there's quite a bit of impudence where people are saying we don't really have to listen to the courts. It's very fact-based, and this is the kind of thing that eventually will head toward the Supreme Court, at the very least testing the power of courts to enforce the law.
So speaking of listening to courts, just in terms of what a president can and can't do, let's listen to White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller talking to reporters yesterday.
The idea that a single district court judge has the authority to direct, as though they were the president, the movement of airplanes around the globe, it is the most outrageous thing I've seen from a district court judge in my lifetime, but frankly, going back multiple lifetimes.
So, Michael, what do you make of that? Does this judge have that authority?
It looks like the judge does. Now, with Stephen Miller and other administration officials, we hear a lot of huffing and puffing about these meddling judges in their robes, you know, getting in our business. At the same time, the White House press secretary said reassuringly, oh, of course we follow court orders.
Trump has always said he follows court orders, that he can always appeal, but he follows court orders.
And in his first term, he did. You know, in some ways, this is talking out of both sides of your mouth, or as they say, the definition of hypocrisy is it's the tribute that vice pays to virtue. Ultimately, the big question will be, in our country, with our Constitution, presidents follow court orders. They do it unhappily very often, very grumpily, but they do. And the question here is, will they follow rulings by a court? Or is this a collision toward a constitutional clash?
Now, the administration has also said that the judge's order was not enforceable because he delivered it verbally, not in writing. Does that matter at all?
Most lawyers don't think that matters. The judge was quite clear. And what he asked the administration to do today was to put down in writing what they knew and when they knew it. The judge is ramping up the precision and the energy of his own orders.
Now, when it comes to options for a judge, what options does any judge have if they believe a president is ignoring its rulings?
Judges do have options. They can hold any litigant, including government officials, in contempt. That is something where it can be civil contempt with fines and other things like that. It could even be criminal contempt, where sometimes people go to prison. If someone refuses to cooperate, there are tools. One of the complications here is the U.S. Marshals, who actually enforce some of this stuff, work for the Justice Department. But the law says they have to follow the rulings of judges. And in fact, sometimes judges appoint private lawyers to prosecute cases if they can't get the government itself to do it. Judges have some tools, but ultimately what will be the main tool is the recognition by this president and all presidents that the Constitution requires us to all follow the rule of law. Public opinion and the demands of history ultimately will be the most important and most effective remedy here.
All right. Michael Waldman is a constitutional lawyer and the president of the Brennan Center for Justice. Michael, thanks.
Thank you.
In what are reportedly the first arrests under the near total abortion ban enacted in 2022 in Texas, a midwife and an associate have been charged for allegedly performing illegal abortions in Houston area clinics. The Texas Newsroom's Lucio Vasquez reports from Houston.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says Maria Rojas performed illegal abortions. An employee of one of the clinics, Jose Lay, is also facing similar allegations, according to court records. Paxton did not provide details on the arrests. The Attorney General's office is seeking a court order to shut down the medical clinics where the abortions allegedly took place. The clinics did not respond to interview requests. Legal experts believe the arrests are the first ones made under the state's near-total abortion ban. Brandon Roddinghouse, political science professor at the University of Houston, says the arrests could test the boundaries of the law.
There's a lot of uncertainty right now with respect to the law, with respect to how the law would be applied in a criminal matter.
The ban has provided exceptions for abortions only when a mother's life is at risk, but not for rape or incest. A separate state law made performing an abortion a felony offense after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade back in 2022. Amy Hagstrom-Miller, CEO of Whole Woman's Health, a privately owned abortion provider, says the ban makes it harder for doctors to provide necessary care. In 2022, when the ban went into full effect, Texas's maternal mortality rate went up by 56%. The rate increased by 11% nationally. In a statement on Monday, Paxton said he would do everything in his power to defend the state's pro-life laws. In 2021, he told Fox News,
I think this bill is defensible, and I think we are going to do a really good job defending it. We already have.
Illegally performing an abortion in Texas is a second-degree felony, which carries a possible sentence of up to 20 years in prison. For NPR News, I'm Lucio Vasquez.
This is NPR News.
It's 6:19. You're tuned in to the morning show with a mix of national public radio and local news and local nature reports. It is Tuesday morning. That means we have so many student reports from across the state of Minnesota, thanks to our phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer, and we are excited to bring you those reports. Make sure you stay tuned and keep us aware of what you are seeing. How are things changing in your neck of the woods? Text us at 218-326-1234. We receive support this morning from UPM Blend in Paper, integrating bio and forest industries into a sustainable and innovation-driven future. More information at upmpaper.com. Weather, it's looking like we're going to see temperatures up to 40 and then mid-20s overnight. And for tomorrow, Wednesday, partly sunny, highs in the upper 30s. KEXE tells the stories of northern Minnesota, and we are looking for your stories. Have you been impacted by federal funding freezes or job cuts? Let us know. Email news@kaxe.org and check out our website. There's lots of great information there about what's happening throughout our region. You can hear the latest Up North report coming up at 7:01. More news is coming up next.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Fisher Investments. Fisher's dedicated team of specialists provide resources on investing, retirement income, estate planning, and more. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From Moderna, committed to protecting people from COVID-19, the CDC recommends getting a second dose of this season's COVID-19 vaccine for those 65 and older. Doctors can advise about getting a second dose. From Progressive Insurance, Progressive is looking for dedicated and forward-thinking individuals to join their growing team. More information, including application, at progressive.com/careers. And from the Doris Duke Foundation.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faudel.
I'm Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. We are just days away from the start of spring. For many of us, particularly in colder climates, this means the start of the gardening season. And who better than domestic goddess Martha Stewart to guide us through the planting of our plants, flowers, vegetables, and even trees. Her properties have become iconic for their landscapes and greenery, and she shares her tips and tricks in her Count 'em 100 First book, Martha Stewart's Gardening Handbook. And she's with us now. Martha Stewart, thank you so much for joining us.
What a pleasure to talk to you, Michelle.
So I saw someplace that you started gardening with your father when you were 3 years old.
It might have been earlier than three.
Did you always like it?
Oh, yes, of course. It was being outdoors. We had a fifth of an acre behind a very modest two-story house with three bedrooms and ultimately six children, one bathroom, and the garden was my refuge.
So this isn't your first book on gardening. I think your first one was in 1991, but I think this is the first one in a while. What does this one do that the others don't?
Well, this is a very good handbook. My first gardening book was a very inspirational book about my Turkey Hill garden in Westport, Connecticut. And that went chapter by chapter, month by month. And this one is good for all year long. It's good for the beginner. It's good for the established gardener. It is a very thorough book dealing in all the things one has to know about gardening.
The book is big on design. You say choose the use. What does that mean?
Well, what do you really want to do in your yard? My place is a haven for birds, wild birds. And I also love to grow trees and shrubs. So I've been planting thousands of trees, and I grow them from scratch. And the book takes you through all these ways of developing a property. And you can make lots of mistakes, and then you can remedy the mistakes. The book goes through that, too, just don't be afraid. If you've done something wrong, you can change it. Because a garden is not ephemeral. A garden is long-lasting, and you can change and alter and redesign and replant, move things. It's not like the house. Once you place your house, it's there. But a garden can evolve, and I love that about gardening.
You talk a lot about in the book about being water-wise, water conservation, and also planting species that are native to the region where you are. Right plant, right place is what you say. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's a huge trend about native plants. And what are natives? Plants that grow naturally in an environment, plants that are not imported from foreign lands, nothing that's too invasive. So you have to choose what you like, first of all. If you like oak trees, plant oak trees, even if they're not really common in your neighborhood. And if you like maple trees because you like the fall color of maple trees, the change of season, then plant maple trees. I have a whole maple woodland. My youngest sister passed away, but her favorite plant was maple trees. Mm-hmm. So I planted like a 10-acre woodland with all kinds of maple trees, native northeastern kind of maples, as well as a lot of Japanese maples.
And does that make you think of her when you walk among them?
Well, like, we call it Laura's Woodland.
Oh, that's nice.
And her children and her grandchildren come to see Laura's maple woodland. And, you know, we miss her, but we have her garden right around us.
You mentioned that you belong to some garden clubs. I have to be honest, aren't people intimidated to be in a garden club with you? I mean, come on.
Well, no. I had to work to get into a garden club.
Really?
I don't want to embarrass my garden clubs too much, but they never invited me. I had my house in Maine for 20-something years, and I was never invited. Even though I let people come for garden tours to see my gardens, I was never invited to the garden club.
What was that about?
Well, who knows? Finally, they asked me for a garden tour, and I said, you know, I'd love to belong to the garden club. And so then I got an invitation. I think it's less about being intimidated by me, just thinking maybe Martha doesn't have time to be a member of the garden club. You know, it takes a lot of work to be a member.
Well, but they should have asked you. I mean, it's let you decide if you want to be in it.
Well, of course they should have, but I'm not, you know what about it. It kind of hurt my feelings that I wasn't considered one of the girls. I wanted to be one of the girls of town. You know, they all belong to the garden club.
Okay, but is it competitive?
Oh, not necessarily.
Because, like, one of the things I like about gardening is it's not competitive. Like, I'm just trying to, like, get my flowers and fruit.
You don't have to show off your plants.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
I would win lots of blue ribbons if I put my plants in, but I don't do the show so much because, first of all, I don't have time, but I love to go to the shows and see what people are doing.
Also, because you don't want to blow people away. I mean, come on, you can tell. You just don't want to, like, take all the prizes.
Oh, no, that's not true. I would love to take home the prize. but I think gardening is such a joy.
Yes. You know, a lot of people became gardening fans during the pandemic. Are there some common pitfalls for beginning gardeners that you could help us avoid?
Yes. Know how big plants grow and what their growing habits are.
Okay, here's where I'm going to tell on myself. Can I ask you about my pet peeve, squirrels?
Oh, squirrels.
Squirrels. OMG.
That's rule number two. Get a dog.
Really?
Get a dog.
It's the dog. That's the key.
They chase the squirrels away from everything. It's so funny.
So before we let you go, are you doing anything special for the spring? Anything you're particularly excited about planting this spring?
Oh, you should see what we just did in Bedford. I hope my neighbors don't hate me. We have like a half a mile of road frontage outside on my wall. And Bedford is known for its messy roadsides. So I've cleaned mine perfectly, put my new compost all over it, planted, don't choke, but about 80 or 85,000 little bulbs, like little grape hyacinths and crocus and scilla and all kinds of really beautiful little bulbs.
Well, why would your neighbors hate you for that?
When they see it, then they're all going to be embarrassed that they haven't done that to their yards. Gardening is very competitive. My friends are all intense gardeners.
Do you throw shade at each other, though? And do you give, like, snippy comments?
Of course. We try to make each other feel envious of the others. And it's so much fun because there should be no envy at all in gardening. You should be so pleased that other people are doing it.
Martha Stewart's latest book is Martha Stewart's Gardening Handbook, The Essential Guide to Designing, Planting, and Growing. Martha Stewart, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
This is NPR News.
Demand for cheaper alternatives to obesity drugs like Wegovy and Zepbound has exploded in recent years.
They're making millions off of this and helping so many people. There's no way this is going to stop being available.
But an upcoming deadline for factories to stop making alternative versions may cut off those who can't afford the name brands. I'm Elsa Chang. That story on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on KAXC People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Good morning. It's 6:29, almost 6:30. I'm Heidi Holton. That guy
who hasn't pulled his microphone in front of his face. Hey, good morning. I'm John Latimer.
That's right.
It's Tuesday, or I wouldn't be here. They don't let me in except on Tuesdays.
You're allowed.
I'm allowed. Yeah. Okay, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
I'm busy. Mm-hmm. You know?
I know. You were just telling me you were visiting schools yesterday.
I was in Virginia and Cherry yesterday, had a nice visit with a lot of interested and excited young children. Got out and did some walking. I had them eating the leaves of the wintergreen, tasting the leaves of the wintergreen, and a long discussion about how that, as delightful as it is to our palate, if you're a caterpillar, you're going to avoid that plant because it tastes like, it's full of wintergreen oil, and you're kind of not very fond of that. So it's protection. And so we talked about that, and then that got them interested in evergreen leaves, and then we started wandering around, and we found more evergreen leaves. The children wanted to know if they could pick and eat the leaves of the trailing arbutus, and I said, no, that's a pretty rare plant. But I was thrilled to find trailing arbutus in the Cherry School, so it was a nice day. Always a good day when I can get out and walk around with kids.
This is the time of the year, especially we rely on our student phenologists as we are noticing all the changes in as spring is coming, and we've got lots of reports for you today.
And not only is spring coming, but there are some very, very obvious signs of spring in the neighborhood right now. So keep your eye out. I have... Last week Thursday, I was in Cohasset, and we were having a little discussion before class, and got to talking a little bit about the Northern Cardinal and how the song is pretty distinctive and easy to identify and not very common up here because cardinals aren't common birds this far north. We no more than walked outside, and there was a cardinal singing. And not only was there a cardinal singing, but right across the street from where we were listening to the cardinal singing, there was a robin in somebody's front yard. Now, first robin, you never know, because that guy might have spent the winter here. But I got two more reports within a few days of robins, and so I was convinced that, in fact, it was the first robin. So that put the robins in the area 12 days early, almost 2 weeks early. And then yesterday, I was out kind of checking out on some plants in my yard, and a red-winged blackbird flew up. So another, and that's 11 days early. So as things stand right now, it looks like a fairly early spring, but I understand that the weather is calling for some snow in the southern parts of our listening area, or
actually in Itasca area, just a slight chance today and into tonight, chance of sprinkles or flurries. Those are lovely words.
Yeah,
you don't worry too much when it's 20-30% chance of sprinkles or flurries. It's going to be mostly cloudy today with highs in the upper 30s to mid 40s, evening lows 22-29. And tomorrow, Wednesday, partly sunny, highs in the mid-30s with breezy north winds 10 to 20, gusting up to 30, evening lows 17 to 21. And by Thursday, we're looking at sunny skies with highs in the mid-40s.
Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where Doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
Coming up on National Native News, we're learning about how the Bureau of Indian Affairs is making new efforts to help solve missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. The federal agency is using forensic technology to help reunite the remains of Native Americans with their families and tribal nations. We also got student phenology reports for you today. Tornado Bob in with the big weather picture. And of course, our text line is open and we would love to hear from you, what you are seeing out there. We were late to this because we were out of town last week and somebody in my household has got a long cold. But we got 36 taps out last night.
Oh, okay.
And the minute you put those in, they're running.
Were they?
Yeah.
My neighbor, I walked over and chatted with him, and he had a tap in a tree, and he said, well, it's starting. So I don't think you missed much.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think there's been a lot of sap gathering, at least this far north, until recently.
Yeah. It's so nice to be out there and just kind of, you know, meet every tree you're putting a tap in and, you know, just kind of walk around and already see things start to kind of fill up and just has become, that was one of those things we picked up during the pandemic and I'm so glad we did.
Yeah.
It gets us outside even when it's a gray day. I don't always like these clouds we're seeing. So, sometimes want to stay inside.
I figure if it's light out, I should be out. Had a nice walk yesterday. Several nice walks. One in Virginia, one in Cherry, and one at home. So
there we go.
That was a good day.
You have until March 28th to donate your gently loved vinyl. We have our record store day sale coming up Saturday, April 12th, but we need your submissions to that by March 28th. And you can drop them off at our studios in either Grand Rapids or Bemidji during business hours.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is making new efforts to help solve missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. Now, the federal agency is using forensic technology to help reunite the remains of Native Americans with their families and tribal nations. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Federal data shows there are roughly 4,200 unsolved missing and murdered Indigenous persons. The BIA is working to bring that number down with the initiative Operation Spirit Return. The agency is partnering with a Texas-based company called Othram, which uses genetic genealogy to identify human remains. Gina Jackson is Western Shoshone and an advocate. She says any resource going towards this crisis is a good thing.
But the injustices are so huge and so vast that we need some big changes. We need to be protected. And right now, Native women and girls and Native people in general are not being protected.
The BIA did not respond to an interview request. In a recent press release, the agency says it's actively investigating 15 unsolved cases across tribal lands. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Human trafficking awareness and prevention was the focus of a community discussion last week in Eugene, Oregon. Among those attending were advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Junior League of Eugene organized the event, which was sold out with more than 150 registrants attending. Among them was Amanda Freeman, a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. She's testified in the Oregon legislature for bills to improve response and awareness of MMIP cases. Freeman also started Umpqua Advocacy last winter. It's a nonprofit organization that helps advocate for victims and their families through Native culture and practices.
I would rather save who we can by being who we are, and if we spread awareness, teach one new person one new thing, then that's something.
Freeman said she planned to talk to a presenter with the FBI on internet safety for young people. Meanwhile, organizer Sarah Koski, community resource liaison for Lane Transit District, said she was pleased with the event. She said it's an extension of a pledge LTD signed last November to help fight human trafficking.
So every one of our buses is a designated safe place for youth. We partner with Looking Glass, our downtown station, and our Springfield station as well. And what does that mean if there is a youth in crisis, if they run to our bus, how do we support them?
The Human Trafficking Hotline's 2023 data shows nearly 250 victims were involved in trafficking cases in Oregon, most of them female. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The San Carlos Apache Tribe in Arizona is offering a $75,000 reward for information in the murder case of Emily Pike. The teenager went missing in January. Her remains were later found. 12 News reports the reward was announced during a vigil held by the tribe over the weekend. Her case has drawn national attention as people from across the Indian country call for justice for Emily and other MMIP cases. Tribal leaders are remembering Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona as a champion for Native people. He died last week after battling cancer. The Hopi tribe in a statement said the congressman was a true statesman, champion of the state of Arizona, and a friend to Indian country. Among accomplishments, the tribe says he helped with clean water projects, electrification efforts, and other investments. He also recently championed a water rights settlement for Arizona tribes. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin took to social media to honor the congressman, saying Grijalva was instrumental in protecting sacred lands, including the Grand Canyon. A candlelight vigil was held for the congressman in Tucson Sunday night. He was 77 years old. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Tornadoes, fires, blizzards. We don't like to think about it, but when severe weather hits, how will you stay informed? Hi, I'm Steve Noy, IT and broadcast engineer for KAXE. As an IT professional, it's hard to admit, but in the event of inclement weather, I can't totally count on my phone or internet. As our nation recently realized during the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy or the wildfires in California, weather and power outages can take out essential equipment, creating a dangerous bottleneck as multitudes of requests were routed through backup systems. That's where local radio comes in. Even if every station but one was disabled and every radio within a 50-mile radius was tuned to it, there would be no gridlock, no delays. It doesn't matter how many people are using it. This makes radio a valuable asset even if the worst should happen, and it's one of the many benefits offered by KAXE. That's why we're looking for your help. Become a member. Text us at 218-326-1234. Be a part of KAXE, people-powered radio.
Coming up, we'll listen to our album of the week, and then we've got some student phonology reports. National Native News is, you hear it, weekday mornings at 6:30, and it's produced by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. One of the many programs we bring to you, we pay to bring you that programming. We think it's important that, and as it happens at 6 o'clock every night, the news from Canada, along with National Public Radio News. Coming up out this week, we've got another article in our Unplugged series talking about funding and how things work around here. If you want to see exactly how KAXE is funded, look at the great article written by General Manager, CEO Sarah Bignall, Unplugged. It's at KAXE.org.
I was down in the cities over the weekend, had a visit with a school on Friday in Wyoming, Minnesota, and down there, the silver maple trees have all, not all, have some have begun to flower. Mm. And so there were a number of trees in flower down there. And usually the delay between Twin Cities and Grand Rapids is about 2 weeks. So sometime near the end of the month, which would be early for the silver maples. I looked at mine yesterday and the buds are swollen, but not yet open. Nothing cracking open. So it is coming. Spring is on its way. It may feel like it's taking its own sweet time, and looking at the weather over the next 10 days or so, highs in the mid 40s and lows in the 20s, good sap gathering weather. Mm-hmm. So if you're a maple syruper, I would be anxious to be checking my buckets every morning to make sure that they weren't overflowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be excited when I get home today. I think we'll be having a lot. There was already some pile up. It's always fun to have that first glass you drink of sap, that cold, pure sap, and how good it is. Wow. Let us know, are you tapping your trees? You can text us at 218-326-1234. Let's take a listen to our album of the week. It is AOEIU, an Ordinary Exercise in Unity. It's by Florence Aduni, a Ghanaian gospel and highlife singer making her international debut on this album. Let's take a listen. That's our album of the week. Always good to hear what our music team has picked out for us. It's AOEIU, standing for An Ordinary Exercise in Unity by Florence Aduni. She sings in English and Frafra, a language and people from the Northeast Prairies of Ghana. You can find more information and find links to this album of the week at our website, kexe.org. I also recommend, you know, if you're looking to find out about some new music, just look at all of the album of the weeks that our music.
Yeah.
It's a really good way to get a deep dive into it. You can take a listen, see if it's kind of music you want. And then, of course, stay tuned for things like Headwaters coming up at 9 o'clock today, right, with Malachi Coons. We've also got great volunteers that bring us great musical choices. That's coming up today at 1 o'clock. See if we can find
I think one of the real pleasures that I have of listening to KAXE is the unexpected nature of the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't listen to a lot of commercial radio, and when I did, as a in my ute, I often noticed that, you know, after about an hour and a half, you were back to the same loop. You
right.
were back into that song again, and that song again, and then that song again, and that almost never happens on KAXE.
That's right.
You tune in, and you're hearing some music that you are not going to come in contact with otherwise, and it's oftentimes surprising, and in some cases, it is really, really satisfying, and I find myself thinking, dang, I want to hear more of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a very nice feature.
Tune in at 1 today. It's On the River with Kurt Randa. We're so excited to welcome Kurt to Afternoon on the Rivers. And tonight at 7, our very own Malachi Coons is back for On the River.
We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
Temperatures right now around the region, looks like 15 degrees in Bedette with fog, 28 in Manoman, Hibbing at 28, Virginia 27, Bagley 27, 22 in Aiken, 28 in Bemidji, Grand Rapids at 30, and Hibbing reporting 28, as is Bemidji.
It's time for some children's phenology. We need to bring you some hope for spring.
There we go.
And there's nothing better than the voices of the children who are out looking at nature and bringing along their observations. Funding for student phenology is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our first report comes from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield.
Hi, this is Maysoon.
And this is Anna.
And we're from Prairie Creek Community School, way down south in Northfield, Minnesota.
There are a lot of birds to report.
Our favorite right now is the piebald robin. We see it every day, and it has also been doing some courting behaviors. Maybe we'll have a lot of little piebald robins.
When we were outside on Wednesday, we saw and heard a big flock of starlings.
There have also been groups of juncos, blue jays, and chickadees.
We have seen and heard many sand hill cranes.
As of March 12th, the vultures are officially back. We've seen tons of them.
And the first red-winged blackbird came back on the 12th, too. Overnight, there were red-winged blackbirds everywhere, and that's about the same time as last year.
Odin and Ellen both saw hawks, and many of us saw eagles.
Amelie heard woodpeckers drumming.
And Silas, who has a thing for counting, counted a flock of 121 geese, another of 97 geese, and another of 53 geese.
And we have been seeing and hearing a lot of cardinals.
Woo! And with the warm weather, we've also been seeing our first bugs, including flies and mosquitoes.
One of us even got our first mosquito bite.
We finished up our syruping and got more than a pint out of 3 gallons of sap. Our refractometer measured 5% sugar content in our sap, and they weren't even sugar maples. We're wondering what caused such a high amount of sugar this year.
The elderberry is just blooming, and a few of the maples are in bloom.
There have been a lot of deer sightings.
And Andrew has been hearing frogs at night.
I hope they'll be okay, since we're going to get more snow this week.
Can you believe it? It was 70 on Friday.
This has been Prairie Creek,
one step along the phenology journey.
Nice report. Thank you, Maysoon and Anna. Great job. Couple of interesting things there. They have this piebald robin, and we have a video of it that will be up on our website probably by tomorrow, so you'll get a chance to see this. If you're not familiar with piebald, it's an old English term which means white and or having white patches. And this robin is quite distinctive. I've seen a photograph of it, but I haven't seen the video yet. Check that out. Beyond that, sandhill cranes. I heard sandhill cranes down there. Turkey vultures. That was a new one, and we'll have to wait and see how long it takes for them to get here. They saw their red-winged blackbirds on the 11th, and I saw my red-winged blackbird, the first one here, on the 17th. So they have, some have moved north. Silas is obviously my kind of guy. He's a counter, and saw lots of Canada geese. I've seen a few Canada geese up here as well. Warm weather has brought out flies and mosquitoes. I talked to Lindsay Engel up at Virginia yesterday, and she said that she had killed a mosquito in her house this past week. Beyond that, a pint of sap from 3 gallons of syrup and 5% sugar. That's really high. That is amazing. And elderberry is just beginning to bloom. I looked at the elderberry in my yard yesterday very carefully, and nothing in the way of any kind of a opening bud there. So they're definitely ahead of us. And some frog singing. And last Friday, when it was so warm, I thought for sure I would either hear a frog sing or see a butterfly flying about, but neither of those things happened, even though I was hyper alert during that period of time thinking, oh, this is the day, but it wasn't the day. So we will see. Keep your eyes open. Those kinds of events are taking place around you all the time. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class from Little Falls Middle School.
This is Rowan and Regan reporting from Mr. Caddett's class in Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of March 16th.
The raccoons and skunks are out in search of food and are frequently spotted near roadways.
Small sugar ants suddenly appeared in large numbers in some of our homes.
We are still hearing barred and great-horned owls calling.
We're seeing frequent robins, but with the large numbers of them that were around this area, it's hard to know if any migrants have arrived yet.
We had a reporting of a barn swallow sighting, although it is very early in the year for them to be back.
Small groups of geese and swans seem to be continuously moving around our area.
It has been amazing how many bald eagles we are seeing each day.
The cardinals, robins, and chickadees are singing loudly in the mornings.
We spotted our first sandhill cranes and eastern bluebirds on the 13th.
The juncos and siskins are still around. We are wondering if they leave on their own or are moving along as other migrants return.
A classmate was able to identify deer, raccoon, and coyote tracks in mud.
We had our first thunder and lightning event on the evening of the 14th.
We had reports of an American tree sparrow, hooded merganser, and red-winged blackbirds this past weekend.
The crows seem to be in larger and larger groups each day, and they are noisy in the morning and evening as they are nearing their roosting sites. That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thank you, Rowan and Reagan. Very nice. Very quick. Rattled right through that. Skunks and raccoons definitely out along the roadways. Sugar ants. I haven't seen any ants moving yet, but it wouldn't surprise me to see them very soon. Barred and great horned owls are calling. Robins. I would think that they have got migrant robins in their area. The possibility of a barn swallow sighting, that's pretty early, as they noted. Geese and swans. Cardinals, robins, and chickadees singing loudly. Sandhill cranes, eastern bluebirds. Dallas Hudson reported eastern bluebirds from the Akeley area over the weekend. So they're definitely some of the early arrivals have come this far. thunder and lightning. I heard thunder down in the Twin Cities on the night of the 14th. We had a pretty good rainstorm and snowstorm up here, but down there it was mostly thunder and not much else. So, and then finally, the American tree sparrow, hooded mergansers, and red-winged blackbirds. So all of those birds are moving north as we speak. So keep an eye out. We will have more student phenology reports for you coming up in the next hour, and probably even a few more in at the end of the show after 8:40 today. So stay tuned for those reports. Keep an ear open for calls and signs in your area. This is definitely the time of year to get excited about the arrival of spring. Support for KAXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.com.